Before we turn to the Christmas Epiphany readings of this day, let me just mention a little update on the life of the church. As you know, the Jubilee year ended yesterday, January 6th, closing of the Holy Door at St. Peter's. And today and tomorrow, Pope Leo has called together all the cardinals for an extraordinary consistory. Sounds like a big thing, extraordinary consistory. It's a meeting of the cardinals. So it is extraordinary in a sense, but it's more a matter of just getting together with the cardinals. And this is the first time Pope Leo will get together with the cardinals since they elected him last year. So it is important in this sense. And it's important for us to pray for the cardinals because they're in a position of leadership throughout the world. And it's good that they work together, they get to know each other, that they collaborate, and they advise the Pope. So it's not so clear exactly what they'll do, and I don't expect any big announcement or anything, but for sure the Pope, Pope Leo, wants to hear from his brother cardinals, and he also wants them to hear him. He wants them to know his position, or his approach to leadership of the Church into 2026 and beyond. So we pray for the cardinals today and tomorrow, today and tomorrow. It's interesting that it is immediately after the Jubilee year, as if to say, now that we have the grace of the Jubilee year, now it's time to put it into practice, time to continue as pilgrims of hope with this renewal. Now we enter into the continuation of our mission in the world. Well, we're continuing our mission in the world by pondering the Word and following the liturgy. Today's Gospel is a continuation from yesterday, and today's first reading is a continuation from yesterday. Yesterday, we pondered Jesus multiplying the loaves and feeding the 5,000 men. Today, he sends the apostles onto the sea, and he dismisses the crowd, and he himself goes up to the mountain to pray. And then he comes in the middle of the night, in the stormy night, he comes walking toward them on the sea. Now, remember, this is Epiphany season, post-Epiphany or Christmas Epiphany, a time when we're reflecting on how God reveals himself, has revealed himself, and how he does reveal himself. So this is a kind of revelation moment that Jesus is giving to the apostles. And now giving to us. As I said yesterday, in trying to figure out what's the difference between revelation and epiphany and these different terms that seem very similar, it's one thing for God to reveal himself, it's another thing for us to receive what he reveals or to open our hearts to what he reveals. God, who is always revealing himself on some level, certainly through creation, is not always recognized, understood, even noticed. And this is what we see happening. No, it says at the end of today's gospel, they had not understood the incident of the loaves. The apostles had not understood the incident of the loaves. And they didn't understand what was going on as he came walking toward them on the water. They were terrified. They were astounded. They were overwhelmed with this revelation. They had not understood the incident of the loaves. On the contrary, their hearts were hardened. So this is a warning to us. Just because God reveals himself, or just because we celebrated the great solemnity of the Epiphany on Sunday, it doesn't mean that we received the benefit of it. Our hearts can be hardened. Sometimes because we're afraid, fear comes up again in the first reading, but let's just reflect on the fear that they have here, the fear of seeing a ghost in the middle of the night walking on the sea. Now, we have to distinguish different kinds of fear, right? There's a natural fear, which we all have, and that's just part of being human. Even Jesus would experience the emotion of fear. Everyone does. It's part of being a human person. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day in the States, and he said that he went ice skating with his grandchildren. And I used to go ice skating a lot when I was young. And my first reaction was, wow, I'd be afraid to do that. That was just I was surprised at my own reaction. I'd be afraid to do that. Even though I skated for years as a child. I haven't skated in probably 40 some years. And I would be afraid that I would fall down and, you know, break my hip or twist my knee or something like that. So that was a natural reaction. There's no sin. There's no sin in being afraid to go ice skating when you're 65. So then he said he went snow skiing with his grandchildren. I had the same reaction. Wow, I love skiing. I love skiing more than skating. But I would be afraid to go skiing, downhill skiing now, because I just don't know if I would be able to keep my balance. Anyway, that's just natural fear. That's not what we're talking about here. Now, seeing a ghost in the middle of the night is a frightening thing. But they didn't see a ghost. They saw Jesus. So there's a difference between the natural reaction to the unknown or to our own weakness or to danger. That's just normal. But to have a resistance to revelation, a resistance to truth, a resistance to the presence of God or the demands of God on us, that's a different kind of fear. And that's what Jesus does not want us to have. So when he says, do not be afraid, he's not saying, do not be afraid of danger, do not be afraid of wild animals, do not be afraid of falling on the ice skating rink. He's saying, do not be afraid of my presence in your life. Do not be afraid of my approach. Do not be afraid of truth and love. That's why he says, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Don't be afraid of me. When God reveals himself, very often the reaction is fear. In fact, almost always in the Bible, when an angel appears or when something dramatic happens, the first reaction is usually fear. And that's why it says so often in the Bible, do not be afraid. But the question then is, are those who receive that revelation, do they then take that encouragement and overcome that fear and welcome the revelation? Or something like the Blessed Virgin Mary, when the angel appeared to her, she was greatly troubled. I was thinking again of the experience of the Magi. When the Magi saw the star, when they recognized something great was happening, the birth of a new king, I don't know if they were afraid, but they certainly responded by searching it out. When Herod heard that there was a newborn king of the Jews, the gospel says he was greatly troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Well, what's so troubling about the birth of the newborn king? That you see the kind of fear that is? That's the sinful kind of fear. Resistance to what God is doing. Resistance to the good that God introduces into our life. So that kind of fear crippled Herod, and perhaps all of Jerusalem, because no one else decided, no one went to see the child, just the Magi. But here the apostles have an experience of this fear when they see Jesus and they're terrified. When he says, do not be afraid, it is I, do not be afraid, they're still overwhelmed. They can't get past that reaction right away. It says they were completely astounded. But for us, it's important for us to recognize the kinds of reactions we have, yes, to terror, to danger, but also to God. Because it can happen that we're intimidated by God's presence. One time St. Augustine said, I'm terrified by the gospel. It's after his conversion. I'm terrified by the gospel. I think what he meant by that was, the gospel puts a lot of demands on us. And I'm not sure if I can live up to it. I'm not sure if I can respond well. So let's look at the first reading, which also addresses this question of fear, but in light of the great revelation of love. This is an extraordinary reading. I hope you take some time to ponder it. Again, John, the first letter of John. Here's John writing many years later, but John was one of the people in the boat who saw Jesus on the water and thought he was a ghost. So he knows the experience of fear, and he knows what he has seen and touched and heard. He's proclaiming all the time the presence of the Word made flesh. And he identifies this presence as love. This is just an extraordinary revelation. So let's take a few highlights from this reading. First of all, John says in this passage, starting with verse 11, if God so loved us, we also must love one another. That's already a kind of frightening thing. We must love one another because God loved us. It's an obligation put on us. If we don't like it, well, then we're going to experience fear. But if we recognize the power of love and we are willing to yield to it, oh, it's exciting. No one has ever seen God, he says. Well, now this is an interesting thing to say. John himself saw God. He saw the Word. It touched him. Now, what he means here is no one has ever seen the divine essence. No one ever seen God in himself. Not while we're in the flesh. Not because God doesn't reveal himself, but because we don't have the capacity to take it in. So no one has ever seen God. And yet we have seen God in the way that he makes himself visible. First of all, in Jesus Christ, that's the best. But John says, if we love one another, God remains in us and his love is brought to perfection in us. As if to say, we can't see God in himself, but we can see him in love, in our experience of love. This makes us reflect on love. And of course, this is a topic way beyond one moment. This is a lifetime of pondering. John says God is love. Not that God loves us or he's a loving God, but that he is love. He equates God with love. So that everything that's genuinely love is a participation in God. We have lots of experience of love in different levels and different relationships. We would not conclude from them that those are God, because our human loves are all limited and tainted with imperfections. Our most, absolutely most loving relationships, maybe parents and children or spouses with each other or the closest possible friends, they're not perfect. And something in the relationship leaves us longing for something more. It's not like that with God. He is love. He's all love. He's nothing but love. There's nothing imperfect or limited in him. So we have to get beyond our human experiences of love or see that they are glimpses of God without being God. So many people struggle with the idea of God as a father because of their human experiences of their fathers. Even if their fathers were very loving, they were imperfect and limited. Where God is not imperfect and limited. So knowing God as our Father and knowing the love of the Father has to transcend whatever our human experience is. But anything good in the love of our human fathers was an indication of what God is like or a participation in who God is. That's why God created fathers in the first place, to reveal himself to us. God is love, and whoever remains in love remains in God and God in him. To remain in love is to remain in God, to participate in this pouring out of ourselves for the good of the other is a participation in God, even if we might not at the moment realize it, but if we're genuinely giving ourselves and welcoming the gift of others, we're participating in who God really is. Okay, so that's just an awesome revelation. But then he brings in this thing about fears at the end of today's reading. There is no fear in love. Perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. So one who fears is not yet perfect in love. Now, again, we have to distinguish. Now, he's not talking about natural fears. John, even when he wrote this, if he heard a lion roaring outside his door, he would experience fear. Because that's just normal. He's talking about the fear that resists the invasion of God's grace, or that hardens itself against surprises from God. That's the kind of fear that shows the imperfection of our love. Well, what are we supposed to do with that? Continue the journey of love. Continue the Epiphany season, continue to welcome the revelation of God in whatever way he reveals himself. Sometimes he reveals himself in the tender helplessness of the baby. Sometimes he reveals himself on the cross. Sometimes he reveals himself in in very consoling experiences. Sometimes he reveals himself in contradictions that are difficult to accept. Well, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of God and of his love. Everything he does, everything he is all love. So things that we would tend to identify as not love, we're either misunderstanding them or they don't come from God, because God is love. Okay, so that's a lot for us to carry. The bottom line is, do not be afraid, because God is love and God is with us.